The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And now this massive election interference at a scale never seen before in our country, beginning with the radical left, George Soros-backed prosecutor Alvin Bragg of New York, who campaigned on the fact that he would get President Trump. I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. As it turns out, virtually everybody that has looked at this case, including rhinos and even hardcore Democrats, say there is no crime and that it should never have been brought.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the culmination of what was a very busy day for the president. You know, he left Mar-a-Lago in the morning, or maybe the day before, but made his way over to the courthouse in Manhattan. And as you just heard him there, was defiant over his indictment at the end of the day when he addressed really the country. He was arrested and arraigned for 34 counts of alleged changing business records. What I found striking, and I don't have the exact numbers, I heard one pundit the other day say that this district attorney, Bragg, spent over $2 million of taxpayer money in the city, right? $2 million. You had security, you had people on overtime. You've had a whole litany of other things to go in for $130,000, business record error or misdoing. We'll see how the judge ultimately rules on that. But it's kind of crazy. It seems more than just, prosecutorial, hey, I'm going to go ahead and get some justice here. It's more like vengeance. You know, it seems kind of biased. Just from the big view, we'll see what happens. Andy McCarthy, who's been on this program, he was a former federal prosecutor. He pointed out that there's no federal crime that's being alleged in that document. And there's something really interesting I found. CNN, not Fox, right? Fox tends to be very conservative. CNN, and not Newsmax, which is also conservative, those two outlets, or Breitbart or The Daily Wire, some of those other conservative outlets. But CNN, they took a poll. They asked people whether or not they perceive this to be a political stunt. You know what they found? I was actually quite stunned, because when you eat the, when you're spoon-fed a certain mantra over and over again, and you're being fed a certain talking point, you know, after a while, that becomes kind of your reality, you know. 60% of Democrats, 78% of independents, 93% of Republicans all said politics played a role to one degree or another. I know a lot of Democrats were very giddy over this, but everybody saw this indictment as being politically motivated, as a political stunt. That's what they said. Do you perceive this to be a political stunt? 60% of Democrats. Bravo. 78% of independents, 93% of Republicans. A quarter of Democrats said it played a major role. So, God bless the American people. It would be nice. Here's just my takeaway from this. If we had objective media, right? If we didn't have such partisanship, where you put the pundits you want on, the talking heads that you want on, your script writers are writing your point, you're spinning things the way you want it. You know, I had a journalism professor years ago who'd be turning over in his grave. He might still be alive today, but if he's dead, he's turning over in his grave, okay? You get my point, right? And all this, what news media has devolved into, right? It's not what it was intended to be. Edward R. Murrow or, you know, so many of the other greats. I mean, journalism was about being objective and reporting the facts, keeping your political affiliation out of it. Now, it's heavily driven by commentary. And it inflames passions, and we see a huge divide. Maggie, you watched the president last night. I did, too. I actually sat down and watched the whole thing take place. What was your take? We haven't talked about this yet. Maggie's been busy grabbing audio and doing all sorts of stuff today, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it. What was your take? How did you view the president? What was your sense?
I thought to myself, well, this is nothing new. He pretty much told the story that we knew has been going on since prior to his election. You know, he kind of went back and just kind of gave the narrative of the harassment he's been receiving since the very get-go. And I think my takeaway was that he said, basically, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
we all know what you're doing, and let's keep fighting the good fight. And that's pretty much it.
Do you think he was tired? He looked tired, and he looked like he was complaining.
I don't think he was tired. Honestly, he looked well-rested. He looked energized. In my opinion, I don't think that he was tired.
He says the country's going to hell.
He did. He did. And everyone, I mean, you could hear the reaction in the room. And honestly, watching it, I was like, that's really refreshing to hear someone say that instead of what we keep getting fed in our large media saying, you know, everything's great. You know, when people are really struggling.
We're on a runaway train right now in America. In fact, coming up later, we'll talk about what happened in the state of Wisconsin with a Supreme Court judge there. Have you heard that news? Also in Chicago, I'll fill you in on what happened in a race that shocked me. If I was a gambling man, I would have lost a lot of money on that particular race. I'll tell you what went down. And Maggie, you were watching that race too.
I was. And actually, my fiance Joe went to the watch party for Paul Vallis's campaign.
Okay.
And he said he came home. He called me and he said, "You know what? I realized." There's nothing that's going to, no politician is going
to
save us.
It,
the only thing that can save us is Jesus. And I was like, amen.
So right. You know, because I've had this conversation over a cup of coffee with my wife this morning as I was getting prepped for the show. I was looking at a lot of the different news. I was the Supreme Court, citizens of Wisconsin chose death. That's what they chose. The citizens of Chicago, they voted for a candidate that is left of left. I mean, Mayor Lightfoot was ousted. This guy had initially run on defunding the police, wants to raise taxes and a lot of other things. In a city, this is the third largest city in the country, that is just bereft right now with violence, with crime, with murder. It's something else. But who knows? Maybe his I'm rooting for him. Maybe his progressive model will help save that city. Maybe I'm not seeing it right. But citizens voted for death. They voted for no law and order. We'll see what happens. And maybe that's an unfair portrayal of him because he does want to put social workers in different areas and provide more community resources. And, you know, I hope Brandon Johnson's right. I really do. I'll root for him to be successful. Also, there's a number of other threats that face America. I want to talk about them today coming up. I won't get into it right now. But then I want to share with you also a prophecy from the venerable Fulton Sheen. And he saw what he saw back then was prescient. It was almost like he could peer into the future. But he offers hope to a troubled America. And I think there is a solution, as Maggie points out. It is without question God. It's Jesus. Right? We can talk about that. We see the rise and falls of empires. There's typically four stages that a civilization goes through, and it normally lasts, I think it's 200 years, 400 years, something like that. Wait till I show you the cycle. I'll go through the steps, and then you determine where America is on that cycle. It's going to be an interesting conversation. You're always welcome to join me here, too. 888-914-9149 to get in. And don't forget the podcast. We had a great conversation yesterday. I meant to tell everybody about it. We were talking about Social Security. If you want to get plugged into that, the possible date changes on it, whether it's going to be cut, how it's going to be saved, if you go to the podcast at relevantradio.com or Apple or wherever else, you can download and listen to some of the conversations you might have missed, and you can share some of this as well. It's Holy Week. Tensions right now are heating up in Israel. I've got some friends who are going to be taking a trip over there. I've been sending them a couple articles. And I said, look, I'll be praying for you during Holy Week in the days ahead. There's ongoing protests right now over a judicial reform plan by the prime minister there, Benjamin Netanyahu. He wants to put this in place. In fact, tomorrow, the very last hour of this broadcast, if you want to join me, 4 to 5 Central, 5 to 6 Eastern, I'm going to be joined by a Catholic citizen of the Holy Land. He actually lives right down from the Wailing Wall, this guy, right down from the Wailing Wall. He's going to paint a picture of really what it's like to be a Christian in the Holy Land. It's pretty amazing. He's really outgunned and outnumbered. I met him on my recent trip. His name's Rami. He's only in the States for a short period of time. He'll be stopping by the studio to let you know what Christ went through and what Jerusalem was like 2,000 years ago, as well as what's happening right now between Palestine and Israel. The news broke this morning that Hamas fired 16 rockets from the Gaza Strip into Israel yesterday. The Israeli Air Force responded. They targeted a weapons manufacturing site in the Strip. with calls from the Israeli Defense Minister for stronger response. But the most significant tensions right now are happening near the Al-Aqsa Mosque, known as the Dome of the Rock. And it sits on the remains of the Jewish temple, you know, right above the Western or Wailing Wall. And the Times of Israel reported that last night, dozens of masked youths barricaded themselves inside the mosque, armed with fireworks and clubs and rocks. They locked the door. They barricaded the entrances. And this was an apparent preparation for Jewish visits to the Mount today, which is Passover Eve. So police raided the site. Clash ended with 350 people being arrested. So tensions right now are high. I'll continue to look at that story as events unfold in the hours ahead and across a special time of year, such as Holy Week. Let's pray, too. I want to get just to one other story here. You know, China is a big part of what we're going to talk about today. I think China's a big part of your future, your kids' future for sure. And I didn't read this and I didn't catch the whole thing. I was driving into the studio and I heard a news report that apparently China, I don't know whether it's the software or the mechanisms that help our docks load and unload stuff, that China may be able to take control of those, use them for espionage. If they ever shut them down for some reason, they could cripple the U.S. Supply chain and even our military supply chain. So Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, and the European Commission chief, Ursula von der Leyen, they've arrived in Beijing for a meeting with the Chinese president there, Xi Jinping, and a number of others. They're there along with 50 other business leaders to push deals for the European business with China. They're also, you know, they're there to try to push China to do more to promote peace between Russia and Ukraine. But as CNN pointed out, Beijing has claimed neutrality in that conflict, and it has not condemned Russia's invasion. Instead, it's bolstered their economic and political ties with Moscow over the last year. So China's view of the world is that it should dictate everything, including religion. So in line with that, Asia News was reporting that the Chinese bishop was installed yesterday. I don't know if you heard about this or not. He's now the Bishop of Shanghai without Vatican approval. So these are the Chinese officials, the government, putting in a guy named Joseph Shen Bin of Haimen. He was appointed to lead the diocese there. This is state-sanctioned bishops' conference. And strangely enough, the head of the Council of Chinese Bishops, Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni, said that the Holy See has been informed a few days ago of the decision of the Chinese authorities. You know, they're going to transfer, and then they learned of the media, the installation this morning. Weird. It's just weird. We'll continue to follow that. China's going to play a huge, huge role in the days ahead. But let's keep it stateside here for a minute. Let's talk about what's happening here at home. Two big events. One, yesterday there were a couple key elections that took place in the upper Midwest. And to say that they were disappointing, that's really an understatement. In Wisconsin, voters chose a judge who is very liberal. The former state Supreme Court was a guy named Dan Kelly. And they chose, I can never remember her name, Janet Protasevich, I'm going to go with. I think that's it. But what it did, this election, it gave liberals on the court the advantage when a couple key cases, including abortion and gerrymandering, come before the court's docket. And that's going to happen soon. And, you know, it may not look good for life in the state of Wisconsin. That's really unfortunate. You know, there's two counties in Wisconsin. I mean, it's fundamentally, it's a state that has gone blue and red, but fundamentally blue. Why? Well, like California or New York that are heavily populated, there are two counties. There's a Dane County and a Milwaukee that overwhelmingly voted for this candidate. These two counties, out of all the other counties, the rest of the state's red except for these two, and Madison, Wisconsin, which is the capital of Wisconsin, 80% of Dane County voted for her, and I think 70% of Milwaukee. But you'll get what you'll reap what you sow. And it's unfortunate. Chicago, 30% of eligible voters showed up for the polls yesterday to vote on who was going to take over for you know, the former mayor there, Lori Lightfoot. And it has been nonstop ads for Chicago citizens in that area. The race was between a guy named Brad Johnson, and he's a paid organizer for the Chicago Teachers Union, and Paul Vallas, he's a former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. Both of them are Democrats, right? But Johnson is further to the left than Lightfoot, especially on policing issues. Vallas had more of Vallas had more of a law and order approach. But Johnson won. And he won by a little under 3%. I'm joined right now to talk a little bit about this with Chris Roebling. He is the founding principal of Clearspan Strategic. It's a Chicago consulting firm and a policy advisor for legal affairs at the Heartland Institute. Those two elections, even though they were for local issues, are being looked at as possible indicators of future trends. What does this mean for the rest of the country and maybe the 2024 election? Chris, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Drew. Good to be with you. Sorry for the voice. It's a little laryngitis, but long-time listener, first-time interviewee.
Well, I am delighted to have you.
Let me just tell you, thank you. I think people who sort of think as you do, if you're any sort of indication of how your audience thinks, need to reflect long, long, long and hard. To quote a coach from Saints Faith Open Charity, They ought to reflect until their tongues hang out, and then they ought to reflect some more.
Wow.
I'm telling you, this is these results are stunning, and I'll tell you why. Number one, folks in Chicago were appalled in 2020 by what Lori Lightfoot allowed. And basically, in Mayor-elect Johnson, we've got somebody who thought Lori Lightfoot was too oriented to, you know, cops and preventing crime, and he'll be taking over the mayor's office. It's absolutely stunning that more people did not turn out. So, big lesson is, if you don't fish where the fish are, and if you don't get them out on election day, this is what you can look forward to. With respect to Wisconsin, I just have to say, I'm not sure that we had the right candidate. That's no personal slam, but Mr. Kelly had already lost, and I just don't think that he's a particularly adept vote getter. But leaving that issue aside, everyone's got to understand that our response to the overturning of Roe and the media's, I will say, distortion of our response and the overturning of Roe have combined to make abortion a decisive issue in many, many cases. And Republicans are not going to get elected if they are relying on single women or even a lot of suburban married women.
So, Chris, you see the life issue in about 20 months from now when we have that election, the 2024 presidential election. Is that going to be a driver? Is that going to play a big role more so than economy and some of the other issues that people are concerned about?
In a certain segment of the population, undoubtedly, yes. You know, who the heck am I? I'll quote Ann Coulter. You know, Ann says, hey, Republicans, we won on abortion. It's no longer a constitutional right.
Right.
Stop, you know, imposing. Now, in the case of Wisconsin, we had this unusual situation. There was a law in 1849. It reflected all the mores of 1849. And I'm basically a pro-lifer, and I have been since 1969.
Right.
But I can tell you that where people are going for extreme restrictions, they are feeding the, I would say, nonpartisan and in the eyes of the voter, non-ideological reaction. And it's not going to look good for people with an R next to their name.
Yeah, that Supreme Court race in Wisconsin was the most expensive state Supreme Court race ever. A lot of money poured into that. What were the national implications of that? What's the message taken away? Even Hillary Clinton got involved in that as well. So why was there so much attention paid to this one race?
well more than $40 million. Estimates are 42, 45, who knows, but it is by far, I think the largest prior to that was here in Illinois at about $15 to $20 million. And the implication is that, for lack of a better term, the Soros orientation, that these you know, very wealthy, very well-heeled, we'll say leftist, not liberal, leftist interests, wherever they may be, can vector into Juneau County, Wisconsin, you know, Mauston, Wisconsin. They can vector into Madison County, Illinois. Even here, you know, in Chicago, getting back to Chicago for a second, Brandon Johnson supports Kim Fox, the George Soros prosecutor, or I should say the George Soros non-prosecutor, right? He is beyond Lori Lightfoot on those issues. Okay. And so so we're now looking at a hyper politicized environment in which local prosecutors are not, and we've seen this already, but it's just going to proliferate. Local prosecutors aren't going to reflect local mores. They're going to reflect, in the case of the leftists, they're going to reflect the leftist creed, the leftist manifesto. Some call it, you know, barbaric Marxism. I mean, it's neo-Marxism for sure. And that is their program beginning to end. And the idea of a prosecutor from, you know, you were mentioning Dane County and Milwaukee County, but, you know, take Fox County up there. You know, you talk about a prosecutor who's going to reflect the local sensibility. That individual is going to be challenged by essentially a prosecutorial bot who comes out fully formed, sprung from the brow of Soros or the brow of leftism, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. What are you expecting for Chicago now that this mayor is in? I mean, I was shocked that, you know, the citizens wanted Mayor Lightfoot out in the primary, and now you've got somebody who's left of left. What do you expect for the city? We know how high crime is there. We know the death tolls from gun violence and a whole litany of other things. What are you seeing in the next couple of years?
Well, no, Johnson has never been close to any responsibility in his life, ever. He has no record whatsoever. He is a product of, you know, the community organizing. I mean, at least Barack Obama had practiced a little bit of law. At least, you know, he had held a job. When I was commissioner of elections, he used to sue me all the time and the other commissioners. It was nothing personal. But, you know, Barack had a job and he actually had done things. Johnson's never done anything and he's never had a job. He was a teacher for 4 years and they claim that he's a teacher.
So, Chris, what's it mean, though, for the people moving forward?
I think we're looking at if he can get on top of the progressive majority in the city council, we're going to be looking at a plethora of new taxes, literally hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of new taxes, some of which are going to be directed at suburbanites and some of which are going to be directed at homeowners and some of which are going to be directed at businesses.
You know, I get that. Taxes will go up. I guess my question is, I mean, how's the rest of the nation look at this? You've got other, you know, very liberal states, California and places like that, New York. Are they going to look at this progressive model and say, hey, it's going to work? Or do you think gun violence, crime, things are going to continue to be perpetuated? No doubt your taxes in Chicago are going to go up. There's no doubt about that. What do you see as the ramifications of this decision? You got less than a third of the citizens going out to vote, too. That was pretty striking.
We are looking at a wholesale abandonment of community policing. We are looking at a wholesale abandonment of the community policing model, which up until the takeover of the Soros bots had proven to be remarkably effective.
Right.
And that's exactly why the left came out against it.
Yep.
And so we are looking at higher crime, higher rates of violence, probably more drug sales and drug fights and drug-related killings, murders, yeah. shootings, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so I think that you are, he is not going to feed the police department. He is going to feed, and this is a little bit in the weeds, but the yeah. police are represented yeah. by a,
Chris, I hope we're both wrong on it. I share your view. I think these progressive policies are detrimental in the long run. I really do. I hope we're wrong. I'm going to root that the city of Chicago, maybe helping more community funding and getting into some rough areas helps the people. But we'll see. I know the rest of America is going to be watching to see how this model plays out. But I got to leave it right there because I'm up against the clock. If people want to check you out, what's the best way to do that? Heartland.org?
Yes, please do.
All right. And you can check them out. That's the Heartland Institute. That was Chris Roebling. He is the founding principal also of ClearSpan Strategic. It's a Chicago consulting firm. You know, there is a solution to all of this. Bishop Sheen saw it years and years ago. I'll share some of that with you coming up as well. Stay with me. I'll be right back with more. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So how are you feeling? That's a big question, right? What's your sense of what's happening in the country and in the world? You know, we have some of the worst inflation in 40 years, that's for sure. We just finished talking about the state of Wisconsin and Chicago. And you can sound off. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. Why are we talking about Wisconsin and Chicago? I think they're a microcosm of what's going on in the entire country and really internationally as well. There was an author, a woman named Rebecca Koffler. She's the president of Doctrine and Strategy Consulting. She's a former Defense Intelligence Agency intelligence officer. She's the author of Putin's Playbook. You might remember that book, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. I think we had her on in the past talking about that. And she wrote a piece just recently where she called the five dire situations that face the states. And look, I'm not here to depress you because I want to give you some hope towards the end of this. And it sounds that way, but I do want to paint a picture. You know, I was watching the news last night. Maggie was watching the election results come in. And, you know, you can get this sense of despondency. I think everything is cyclical. I think you can only go so far in one direction and the pendulum's got to swing back. There are solutions to some of these problems, but Let me just zoom out. Let's take a not just a national look, but an international look at what's happening, and then love to hear from you. What are the solutions? How do you see this being resolved? Right? What are your concerns? You can join me anytime. It's 888-914-9149. Now, the difficulty I face, you know, balancing the facts of life that are on the ground and which portend exactly what this author calls dire situations. She sees us facing five dire situations, which could lead to fear. You know, the solution is Jesus Christ. He's still king of the universe. As I go through some of this, I want you to be aware of that. He's still sitting on the throne. Nothing that happens here on earth is outside of his power and his notice. But I am going to share with you what she wrote. Then at 3 o'clock, we're gonna place all those situations before the Lord and his divine mercy. And we're going to pray that our united prayer will bring grace and bring about conversion. So let me just lay out for you what she wrote, okay? Here are the dire situation Koffler sees you and I facing. And they're not going to really surprise you either. I mean, we've talked about these. Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and the possibility of biological weapons, which are called anomalous health situations. So with Russia, we've got Putin stalemate in Ukraine, and it's pushing him to threaten the use of nuclear weapons. Even Donald Trump in his speech last night kind of. I don't know whether I don't know how to feel about whether I appreciate or disapprove of what he had to say. He was saying this new administration's so weak that we are on the verge of a nuclear third world war, and he says it could happen. Now, he was a president. He does know. He has access to a lot of intelligence. Maybe he knows something that we don't. I pray that's not the case. But you got Russia threatening to use nuclear weapons and even providing his ally, Belarus, with aircraft capable of carrying these nukes. Koffler said that in all the war game analysis that they did at the DIA, every conflict between Russia and Ukraine that they gamed out ended up with the use of nuclear weapons. Every game that they played out to see, hey, if Russia does this or if we do that or if they get involved, it ended up with Russia using nuclear weapons. That is not a comforting thought. Number two, China, right? She has this on her list of obvious reasons. Xi Jinping's visit to Moscow shows that these two countries are getting closer together, right? Another analysis told the Times of London that Xi has really become the leader of Russia, and there's a possibility that Russia could break up because of the Ukraine war. It would give China access to Siberia and its oil and its gas riches. So they claim there's a real threat that the real threat is China possibly taking over Taiwan, which would then put the U.S. in a real bind since we've been depleting our weapons and sending them to Ukraine. We just agreed to, what, another $1.2 billion worth of funding, right? How much of our weaponry have we gone over there? Dakota Wood, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Woods, who was on my program, he says it's going to take years to replenish what we have already spent. So if the U.S. finds itself with its back against the wall, something to think about, right? Iran. That was her third point. The country apparently has developed a list of nearly 300 individuals and organizations that it wants to target. Most importantly, she says there are now stronger ties between Moscow and Tehran. That means that Russia can transfer its nuclear know-how to a country that despises not just the U.S., because it hates us, but Israel. It vowed to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And one final one. I don't want to belabor this too much. I want to get to your calls and maybe a little bit of hope. North Korea, okay? That needs no introduction. It likely has nuclear capabilities now, and it could use those, as the director of National Intelligence said. And let me quote the director of National Intelligence said, quote, to cause temporary limited disruptions of some critical infrastructure networks and disrupt business networks in the U.S., reading between the lines, it sounds like an EMP could be used, which is more dire than temporary limited disruptions. There was a doctor, Dr. Peter Pry, who used to be on my program all the time, head of the EMP Commission, testified before Congress many times. He's warned that's one of our great nation's greatest threats. What disengages all of this? It's prayer, and it's sacrifice, and it's penance. I mean, I know that there are some officials, some Congress people who have access to really what's going on. You probably wouldn't sleep at night if you really know what's going on. Final note here, and I'll take your calls. There's also the possibility of some biological weapon being released, though there are those who think that, oh, COVID was that. I'm not going to go down that lane. But these are the threats that face us. I worry about our power grid. I worry about EMPs. I worry about hacking. I mean, it's very easy to cripple America. Like I said, I saw this piece with our nation's ports using Chinese software that governs a lot of this machinery. They could shut down supply chains in America, bringing us to its knees, and shut down America's military supply chain, one expert said. So this is all call for prayer. Coming up in a few minutes, I'll share with you what Bishop Sheen had to say as well. But let me grab a few of your calls. What are you seeing? How are you feeling? What's the solution? We'll go to Ed in Vallejo, California. Ed, thanks for joining me. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Yeah, this is my little 2 cents. I think what you said the last time was true. I don't think it's going to be weapons. I think it's going to be the EMPs. It's going to be shut the oil off. And here's the horrible thing. Unfortunately, people start grabbing things. You know, we panic. Everybody runs and thinks about themselves. And you turn this country into chaos. Yeah. You know, that's just the way I feel. I don't worry about – that's what I would – that's the modern thing. Just shut our electronics off. Look, everything runs on it. Like, our phones, everything. Yeah.
No, yeah, I'm with you, Ed. I tend to agree. I mean, I pray to God we don't see a nuclear exchange ever. I don't think any nation wants that, right? But boy, what could cyber warfare do? I mean, you could open dams, you could shut down power grids, you could strip people of, it could be absolute chaos. An EMP? You're right. There's lots of ways that you can cripple America if you wanted to. I think the warfare would be very, very different. Hey, Ed, thank you. I appreciate your call. It's good to have you here.
Have a blessed day.
Yeah, you too. Nobody knows the future. I'm not here to frighten anyone. I'll share one other aspect from a spiritual perspective that I've often thought about. Our Lady said, in the end, the Immaculate Heart will triumph. So we know how the story ends, right? So you're not to fear. But she also came in 1917 to those Fatima seers saying that war was the result of sin. And what did she tell the kids? She said, pray the rosary, fast, do penance. She showed them the fires of hell. That's the same message. Nothing has changed. We have to pray. We have to fast. We have to do penance. That's what we have to do. That'll mitigate this. God's so merciful. Things will change in miraculous ways. I've seen the power of the rosary throughout the course of the 20th century result in unbelievable defeats. You know, we've seen communist forces leave countries they should never have left. We've seen divine protection. We've seen miraculous things take place. I encourage you to pray the rosary. Pray the chaplet with me. That's the other gift that God gave us. He gave it to Faustina in the late 1930s. So Our Lady comes with the rosary in 1917 to Fatima. He comes to St. Faustina in the 1930s saying, hey, pray this. Pray this prayer. You know, the world will have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. That's what the Lord told Faustina. That's what we need to do. We need to do that. There's some other things that we need to do as well. When I come back, I'll share a couple of those with you. And I may also just share with you a quick look at where we stand right now, the rise and falls of nations. There are 8 stages, some say, in how civilizations rise and fall. And they are, I think, eye-opening. If you've never heard this before, I think you're going to appreciate this look. And then you determine where we are on the spectrum of things right now. That and more when I return.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, hey, thanks for joining me. So good to be here with you today. I do appreciate your time and your friendship and our ability to look at life together, to navigate it together, and look at history and look at the future. I was talking to Maggie during the break. I said 1917, not only did the Virgin talk about the fruit of war, the fruit of sin being war, but she warned the kids. She says, look, there's a second great war coming. You know, it does not have to happen. Pray, fast, do penance, right? Pray the rosary. But the world failed to respond, and we saw that in La Salette when she warned of the great potato famine and the blight that would affect Western Europe. We saw it in Champion, Wisconsin, where she warned of a great chastisement that would befall that part of the country if the people did not amend their ways. We've seen it time and time again. I'll give you 100 examples. So I think we're at a critical time today. Never before in the history of the human race have there been so many reported visions of the Mother of God and even of Jesus himself. I think we're at a crossroads for humanity. I think we need to pray. There's a place of reported apparitions where the Virgin Mary always ends her messages by saying, you know, she'd say, my children, make this time of prayer. And then she'd thank us for responding to her call. This last time, she didn't thank anybody. She just said, make this a time of prayer. You know why she didn't thank us, didn't say thank you for responding to my call? Because she's been saying it for 20 years or however long it's been, 30 years. And no one's responding to her call. Are you responding to that call? It's a gospel call. It's a call to prayer and to repentance. It's the message of John the Baptist. Are you preparing? What are you doing? It's a major, major question. You know, Bishop Fulton Sheen, let me start here, then I'll grab a few of your calls. The Venerable Fulton Sheen, his beatification miracle is already approved. He'll be blessed and on his way to sainthood. He was prophetic. It's almost like he had a view into the future. I believe he was truly a modern-day prophet, not because he foretold specific events, but because he saw where the world was at and how far it had wandered from God. And where that wandering meant it was going to go. I'm a historian. I like to look back at history and see the path that we've taken. We're on the same path again. You know, we look back with nostalgia on the mid-20th century, you know, after the Second World War, of course. Sheen was very clear-eyed in that time about how things were really going. There was a journalist at the National Catholic Register, I think it was last year or the year before, he wrote a great piece on the prophecy of Bishop Sheen. And he did a great favor to a lot of people by compiling a lot of the insights of Sheen. I'll see if I can dig that up. Maybe I can get it to Maggie and we can post it. But I want to share just one or two quotes from Sheen. I think this is, it's eye-opening. He said this. This is what Sheen wrote. He said, our so-called liberal civilization, which is dying, is only a transitional phase between a civilization that was once Christian and one that is anti-Christian. Isn't that where we are right now? John Paul II talked about, you know, the anti-Christ being this time in which we live in where we are anti-Christian. It has no stability on its own, Sheen writes, being based on the most part in successive negations of the Christian philosophy of life. This alone constitutes the crisis of democracy, and it will either return to its roots, and we were founded based on God, right? Our founding fathers were deists. But they said this republic would never succeed if it didn't thrive on a virtuous people. You know, we had days of prayer and fasting in our nation's early history. Sheen says it will either return to those roots or it will die. It's not me saying that. That's Venerable Bishop Fulton Sheen. And what he means by liberal civilization, of course, isn't what we mean by liberal today, but referred to. He was talking about classical liberalism, which was a result of the Enlightenment. But he also saw profound and negative influence of the news media. Listen to what he said about them. He says, tremendous disproportions are created by headlines and news reports. Now, he's saying this back, what, 1940, 1950? Look what we have today, a 24-hour news cycle, right? You got 800 channels. It's ridiculous. Tremendous disproportions are created by headlines and news reports, he said, as too often the startling is identified with the true. He says, parents who live in love and affection for one another and rear their children for the triple piety of God, neighbor, and country, they make no headlines. He says, but we are not without hope. We're not without hope. He says, we are living on the eve of one of the greatest spiritual revivals of human history. Oh, you love that? There is hope out there. There is hope. This is what he saw. He says, souls sometimes are closest to God when they feel themselves the farthest away from him. I remember one time I was going through a really difficult time in my life. I was actually almost questioning God. Never really abandoned belief in God, but I just didn't understand what God was doing in my life. And I felt that my prayers just were not heard. You know, the more I prayed, the deeper, the harder, they just weren't heard. And a friend of mine said, Drew, it's at times like that that your prayers are heard the loudest. You know, there's that classic story of the footsteps in the stand where the person goes through their life review. In the tough times, they only see one set of footsteps, and then they're like, Lord, where were you? And the Lord told that soul, is that those moments that I was carrying you. Sometimes, Sheen says, souls are closest to God when they feel themselves the farthest away from him. And you might be there right now at the point of despair. He says, for an empty soul, the divine can fill. A worried soul, the infinite can pacify. A self-concerned, proud soul, however, is inaccessible to grace. It really is a warning for all of us, isn't it? That's just part of what Bishop Sheen said. I mean, there's so much more I can get to, but we'll take a few of your calls. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Before I do that, though, let me do this. I want to share with you one final thing. I have hope. I do for the future. But I want to share with you the cycle of nations, since I promised you that and I wouldn't get to this. I'm going to give you the thumbnail of it. One day I can drill into this and break down each facet of it for you. Sheen talks about marginalizing God. The dangers of marginalizing God is a civilization killer. Okay? Cultures and civilizations, they go through cycles. And over time, if you just look back at history, many civilizations, many cultures have risen and fallen. Look at the Babylonian Empire. Look at the Egyptian Empire. Look at the Roman Empire. You know, go through history. Just take a look at the empires. You know, there was a time where Britain said the sun will never set on the empire. And look where we all are now. Cultures and civilizations, they come and go. So will America if we don't stay close to God. Only the church will remain. And never forget that. The gates of hell can prevail against, they can't prevail against the church. They just cannot. The floodwaters will rise, but the church will always, always rise above it. But if you love your country and you love, you know, your culture, you're sharing the same pain I am for where we're heading as a nation. A lot of sociologists, a lot of anthropologists have described the stages of the rise and fall of world civilization. And there's eight of them, and I'm going to make this really brief. Now, we can go into it much deeper. The first is from bondage to spiritual growth, right? Great civilizations are formed, they say, in a crucible. Ancient Jews were in bondage 400 years in Egypt, right? The Christian faith in the church came out of 300 years of persecution. Western Christendom emerged from very chaotic conflicts with the Roman Empire. American culture was formed by the injustices that grew in colonial times, right? So you go from bondage ultimately to spiritual growth. Suffering, it brings wisdom. It brings demands of a spiritual discipline. So when we become a spiritual people, that grows to great courage, and anointed leaders, arise. And you saw what happened. You know, America sought spiritual freedom. Great courage arose. From the courage, you seek liberty from the oppression you're under. And as a result, the courageous fight for freedom, for liberty, for greater justice. And yeah, I'm just taking a look at America, and that's what happened to us. You know, heroism and virtue brought about liberty. And it brought about the great nation that we know as America. But from liberty, what happens? So often we get fat. From liberty, we see abundance. Liberty ushers in great prosperity. There's never been a wealthier nation than the United States of America because, you know, the civilization is still functioning with the virtues of sacrifice and hard work. We saw that after the Second World War, right? But then comes the first danger, abundance. Things there are in too great of abundance, and they weigh people down. They make people lazy. They make them fat. Jesus said that the man's life does not consist in his possessions. Try to tell people in a culture that starts to experience abundance about that. Look at the godlessness now, right? We rejected God. We worship at the altar of materialism. That's what's happening. So what happens to the culture? You know, it forgets its origins. It's less willing to make sacrifices. You know, and it gets way down. From abundance, we become complacent. Everything looks fine. It'll be fine. We'll get through this. We're the United States of America, right? Yet the infrastructure, the necessary virtue is crumbling. And who raises the alarm? If you raise the alarm, you're labeled as a killjoy, right? An extremist. You're judged. From complacency, we become apathetic. And then from apathy, we go back into dependency. The number of people who lack virtues, what do they rely on? They rely on the government. They rely on somebody else. Growing demands for collective solutions, right? For governmental solutions. The family is gone. And then from dependency, what happens? We end up back in bondage. As dependence decreases, so does centralized power. And dependent people tend to become very dysfunctional, very desperate. They seek a savior. And what do? They look to a strong central leadership. And that centralized power corrupts, and it multiplies. Before you know it, the civilization is gradually ended because people in bondage no longer have virtues that are necessary to fight. You are a person of virtue. Our founding fathers envisioned a virtuous people and a successful nation. I am not giving up hope on America. I've got great hope for the future of this nation. I think Relevant Radio is one of those great antidotes. Let's pray for our country and the world.